The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files, the truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Hi, thanks for being with us tonight. I have a wonderful guest. I'm very excited to talk to her this evening. Her name is Aliza Madadalyan, and she's a mystic, visionary, spiritual guide, internationally acclaimed master healer, and has worked with some amazing teachers and developed her own method of healing. So we'll be talking to her in a few minutes, but first, tonight's metaphysical moment, or maybe metaphysical musing. I was on my way to New Hampshire to talk about ghosts, which I do a lot, and most people don't know where New Hampshire is. It's a very small state tucked away in New England. People know about it when the elections come around because of the New Hampshire primary. But it's a very interesting place. And the motto of the state is on the sign as you cross the border from Massachusetts to New Hampshire. And the motto is live free or die. And that was a motto that came out of the Revolutionary War. You know, the point to it was that they would fight to the death, that they would not allow the British to control them. But the way it came across to me when I read it was much more about life in general and about metaphysics, that if you are not living free, if you are not who you are and becoming more of who you are, that essentially parts of you die. And that over time, those parts that you don't express, you don't understand, you push to the side because they're scary or any number of other things that everybody does, those parts of you start to die and your way of being in the world is constrained dramatically. So live free or die brought up for me the whole sense of commitment to personal growth, the sense of finding out how things get stuck. What's stuck for you? What happened in your childhood that makes you who you are in both the good ways, but also in the ways that constrain you? What were you told that about yourself that people were saying were not quite right? And how do you hold that? How do you hold on yourself? Most of that stuff winds up being unconscious. And there are many, many healing modalities that work with that unconscious material. I call it spyware because it's just like spyware on a computer. It comes from outside of you. It gets installed without your permission. It takes a lot of your energy. It doesn't let you do the things that you intended to do. And it puts instructions in that have a detrimental effect on your life, but you didn't put it there. You don't even necessarily know it's there, just like spyware. Spyware gets installed when you go someplace on the internet where they're being sneaky and they install this stuff, and then it wreaks havoc with your computer. So working with spyware, working with the unconscious, working with the things that you don't know, because you don't know what you don't know, and you can't know what you don't know. If you don't know what it is, you don't have a clue to work with it. And when most people get the clues that something's wrong, they don't have any idea of the kinds of things that they can do to get in there. So that's an ongoing conversation and probably a very good segue to Mata's work, because I know that she has work that bears on that. So that's tonight's metaphysical musing, and I'd like to introduce my guest, Madadalyan. Are you on the line, Mada?
Yes, I am. Happy to be here.
Hi, thank you so much for being with me. So you've got a very varied background, and you've had some amazing experiences. I know that you had many changes in your life, and you've been guided to work with various teachers. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got where you are, and then we can talk about what you do, because I'm really fascinated by your work.
Well, I think, like you said, everything in our childhood, in some way or other, forms a foundation to how our life will unfold and the perception we would have about reality and about the world. And in my case, I had two wonderful teachers as a very young child, both two of my grandmother and grandfather. So both of them really created a very important foundation for me. One was my grandfather, maternal grandfather, when he was dying and I was 5 years old. And I witnessed his death, and sort of I was lost in between the kerfuffle, and, you know, my mother and my aunt were trying to take care of him, and he was really in very bad pain, so they were trying to help him with his pain. And, of course, at the time, they were using morphine, like they do these days as well. And I think he was in such deep pain, and he was so angry that he couldn't really do much. And I could feel his helplessness. And this is the thing when people don't really know how to connect with that inner stillness, then they go into a panic mode or you know, the fear mode. So I watched him pick up this bottle of morphine and drink out of it. So, and then obviously, very shortly after, everything was silent and he was gone. And I remember thinking as a young child that watching all that, I thought, you know, one day I'm going to die as well. And the world will continue as just it's continuing after he died, my grandfather. And I thought, well, I kind of felt the insignificance of me as a little person being on the planet. I thought the sun is going to continue shining, people are going to continue doing what they're doing just as after his death. And I thought to myself, then who am I? Where am I coming from? What is my purpose here? Where do I go when I die? And I think that sort of put the first foundation for me to ask those questions that we normally tend to start asking toward the end of our life. So that was the first gift from my grandfather. And then the next one happened when my paternal grandmother, she started living with us when my parents went through a divorce when I was 7. So the first one happened when I was 5. And then at 7 years old, and I was living with her, we were staying in the same room as she came in to help out. And I remember her sitting in her bed praying every night before she went to bed. And then one day I started teasing her and I said, well, there is no God. Where is God? If there is God, show him to me. And she held me and she said, God is within you. God is within every human being and everywhere you see around, in the trees, in the birds, everywhere. And that totally made sense. And I thought, you know, you're right. You're telling me the truth, so I'm going to leave you alone. So those two things really helped me to have this comfort with knowing that I'm not separate, that I'm part of the whole, and that somebody as an adult was able to tell me the truth, was able to tell me something that, you know, all children come with knowing. We go through this bardo state after having left our body from the previous life. And in that bardo state, we become more conscious of the other reality other than the material reality. And then we come in with that awareness still in us as children. And then we gradually forget it. So in this situation, it helped me to remember this truth and that that understanding stayed with me till years later. I started, actually, I wasn't even looking for anything spiritual because a part of me sort of felt that, well, I know the answers to things. I know that, you know, God is within everything, and I don't really need to follow anything to find those answers because the answers are inside me. And however, there was still that longing that something probably in me that I was not aware, that was still hasn't received the answers to the question, who am I? And I just, you know, at the 24, I just happened to have this gift that was given to me through a woman that I met from Russia, and I had left Russia 2 years prior to that. In 1976, I went to Montreal, and when I met her, she gave me this book to read by Uspensky called In Search of the Miraculous, and it was about the teachings of Gurdjieff, and that book completely opened a new door for me, and I was a young mother. I had my daughter when I was 20, So through all that, and I felt that, you know, married life wasn't quite for me. There was something else that I needed. And so that opened a whole new door. I don't know if you know that book. It's a very popular book, and it still is in print by Uspensky. And it's about the teachings of Gurdjieff. And then she gave me a book by Osho, and that opened a completely other door for me. And it sort of like fell into my lap. I wasn't even looking. So as they say, when the disciple is ready, the master appears. That was my situation. And that started me on the path of meditation and introspection and more meditation. So then that awareness of I need to find who I am was so strong that I left behind my my training in education and architecture, and I was focused. I needed to find myself. I needed to find who I am. And obviously, when we focus on something and we put 100% energies into it, then, like Jesus says, you ask and you shall receive. So that sort of the answers come and the experience happens, and then you get to discover what you're looking, what you're trying to find. And, of course, you know, the whole experience of coming to that point of realization. And it's something that does not happen through the mind alone. The mind can only go so far. And that the experience of enlightenment happens when actually the mind is let go of, when we are prepared to face our death and walk through the door of death, because what's dying is the ego. And in that situation is what helped me to have the experience of recognizing that the whole universe is just one big phenomena, and the energy within it is made of joy that arises out of creativity. What we call God is just nothing but the process of creativity, and it exists within each human being. So whenever we're creative, whenever something arises from within us that transcends the mind, we are God, we become God. And in a way, we realize that we are. And so therefore, there's nothing on the outside that you seek any longer, because you recognize all the answers are already within you.
That explains a lot. Among other things, it explains why lots of spiritual people are hermits, because they just have no interest in what the world is doing. Not so much that they're trying to isolate themselves, but they just have other things to do and they're not interested.
You know, that's so true. That's so true. But, you know, it's, in the beginning, that's very true. But then what happens, you know, with the story of Zarathustra, where the 10 paintings of the Zen paintings, the 10 bulls of Zen, might be aware of that. And at the end, I remember Osho gave a beautiful discourse on this. And at the end, where he comes back with the bottle of wine in his hand, It's like the story of Zarathustra, when he, in a way, renounces everything, goes into the forest. But once you find the truth, it's almost like you can't help it. You feel that compassion arises, that you have to come back and share it. And every single person who's been a hermit somewhere comes to the place of recognizing that unless I share this, what I've learned, my personal growth to the next level will be impeded, because it has to be a continual energy flow. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think so many people now, especially now, are so enthusiastically sharing their journey and what they've become aware and what they can impart. And everybody has their own unique gift. And this is how we enrich the world and bring in more awareness of the metaphysical, of the new dimension, the new world, the new humanity that could live with that dimension.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm curious. You spent time with Osho, and I'm very curious about that experience. I ran across people who were his followers earlier on when he went by a different name, Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh. So I had some sense of what was going on, but that was decades before he kind of made a deeper shift and started calling himself Osho. So you studied with him for quite a while.
From 1976. And I've been basically, I could say that, you know, he has about 230 books in print, mm-hmm. Translated in 53 languages, and he has many new meditation methods called active meditations that he's devised. And I not only practiced it in his presence very religiously, in a way very focused, but I also started teaching them afterwards. So what I can say about being in the presence of an enlightened being is, especially caliber like Osho, to me, he's the Buddha of the 21st century, because every master brings in new methods that can help other people in their journey of transformation. And I can say for sure that if it wasn't for his methods and his active meditation techniques, I would have not had the experiences I've had. It's very much, I could say 50% at least, due to those meditation techniques, and of course 50% due to my commitment to my path. Mm-hmm. So those ingredients are very necessary. And many people often misunderstand what it means to be with an enlightened being. Many people think, well, if I go and sit by the side of enlightened master, something will rub off, and, you know, suddenly I might get enlightened, or he'll help me to become enlightened. But this is not true. This is very far from truth, because each person is responsible for their own transformation. And unless you take the responsibility for your own transformation, you will not be really be able to receive the gift. That's the thing. Because in order to be able to receive the gift, we need to know how to ground the magnitude of the gift. And it is as humongous as the universe itself. It's like the universe suddenly being given to you, and you have to contain it within your body. And in order for that to happen, you need to have a lot of self-awareness, and you have to have an ability to watch and witness, because in those moments, you need to watch the fear and not be affected by it. You need to remain a witness to the fear in order for the universe to say, okay, you deserve this gift. And to me, this is what my personal path has been with Osho, and being in his community, in his energy field, has helped also tremendously, because, you know, like, we all have this sense of why the fear is there, because we don't trust. And what don't we trust? We don't trust the unknown. We're afraid of the unknown. And that's why many people don't like to go into the unknown. But in an energy field of an enlightened master, or someone who has crossed through that door and have jumped into the unknown and has survived, it gives you an encouragement, and also it gives you that sense of, well, somebody's there who can hold my hand, so I could take that risk and jump into the unknown. And what is dying is basically our ego, and the ego doesn't want to die. And that's that's the difficulty, because the ego, it only can exist within the known. Because ego is made of the known. It's made of the mind that works with between the two polarities of negative and positive, yes and no, good or bad, and to jump out of those dualities, that's where the cultivating inner witness is so absolutely essential, and this is where meditation comes in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a slightly different way of talking about the ego, because I think of it as Chicken Little. Its job is to keep the physical body alive. So it's always looking for any danger and screaming about it. And so my personal sense of working with the ego is to say, okay, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm on top of it. You can calm down now. And just know that it's going to do its thing, but it's not in charge. And eventually the relationship changes. But a lot of people are controlled by their ego and the hysterical nature of the ego, rather than just saying, okay, thanks. I appreciate that. I needed to know that. Good for you. So
that tricky ego, it's so tricky. It could take you on a blind goose chase for sure. One moment,
right.
One moment it, you know, it wants one thing, another moment it's, and also, you know, the ego is based on all our belief systems. And as you were saying in your introduction, you know, very, very nicely, and you really put your finger on a bullseye there, that it's true. What happens in our childhood creates the story, and then we get identified with the story. And that identification basically goes into the unconscious, and that then it runs the show. It's like the bottom of the iceberg that decides where the iceberg is going to go. And no matter how much the conscious mind, the top of the iceberg, wants to go some place warm, the bottom of the iceberg takes you to the North Pole. So, it's so true. And that's why part of the work is to go into that unconscious, is to see what those layers are, what are those beliefs. Because all our beliefs are is all a story, and the whole story is based on, this is what makes up the ego. And I call it the wounded ego. You know, I make a distinction in my book between a wounded ego and a healthy ego. And in order for us to let go of the ego, we need to, first of all, heal the wounded ego and make it strong. And it doesn't mean becoming selfish. It's becoming more self-contained and becoming an individual. That's the healthy ego. And only a healthy ego who's an individual can then say, well, you know, I'm going to let this go. Just like, you know, you're saying, well, okay, I see you, but thanks. You know, I'm still going to jump and experience whatever I need to experience. So that's the healthy ego that says, I'm just going to watch every experience, and I'm not afraid of the unknown. I can jump into it. And although you feel the fear, and I have to tell you, when I met that, I came close to that, and I made that decision, I did feel, my whole body felt the fear, and I felt that almost like a trembling inside, and you can feel it. It's like, okay, one more step, and I'm going to disappear.
Right.
And many people come to that place. Many people, many seekers come to that place where they feel the fear. They know they could take one more step and they're going to die. And they just shy away from that step. They just step back. And that's such a crucial step.
Hold that thought, because we're going to have a break in a second. And I want to come back to that and kind of share my probably flippant way of looking at that, because my training was very different. And also, when we come back, I'm going to give the call-in number for anybody who's listening in live to be able to ask us some questions, which is always great fun. So we're going to go to a break. And this is the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. This is David Farkas on Empower Radio with Mata Dayan.
Dear Mom and Dad, one thing I've learned in the Army is that when you're lucky enough to get a little time off, you should put it to good use. So I'm taking a moment to write and tell you that I'm fine and doing well. We have good days and bad days over here. We try to remember the good ones and get through the bad ones as best we can. Mostly we have each other, and that's what keeps us going. That and the pride of our commitment to getting the job done, whatever it takes. I miss you all very much and can't wait to get back to life as usual. Please tell everybody hello for me, and that I'll be home soon. And Mom, since you asked, if anyone wants to help, just tell them to contact the USO. You can't believe how much they do for us. With love, your son Michael.
The USO depends on the generosity of the American people. People just like you. To find out how you can help, visit us at USO.org. The USO. Until everyone comes home.
Look for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities.
The bare necessities of healthy living are easier than you think.
You better believe it.
It all starts with the right balance of being active and eating well.
You eat ants?
You're gonna love the way they tickle.
And the food pyramid shows you the way. With just the right amount of exercise and the necessary grains, vegetables, fruits, milk, and meats and beans to keep you and your family on a path to good health.
Just the bare necessities of life.
Just remember, every food group, every day.
Crazy.
Start by taking small steps. Steps that add up to a happier, healthier life. Try making half your grains whole. Or start adding fruit to breakfast.
Me and Baloo, we've got things to do.
So eat right.
Have a banana.
Be active.
I'll move. That's it.
And have lots of fun.
Yeah, man.
For your own path to a healthier you, visit mypyramid.gov.
Oh, man, this is really living.
This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Ag Council.
Think of three businesses you'd miss if they disappeared. Then go in. Say hello. Pick up a little something that makes you smile. That's what keeps them around, after all. Hi, I'm Cinda Baxter, founder of the 350 Project. And did you know that for every dollar spent in a locally owned, independent business, more than 68% returns to your community? Spend it with a big box, chain, or other corporate store, and the amount drops to only 43%. Spend it online, and unless you live in the exact same place as the e-tailer, nothing comes home. Does that mean you have to swear off big boxes and chains? No. Instead, if we balance our spending between corporate stores and those owned by people in our community, we not only lift the local economy, but return more of our investment to our city's streets, fire departments, silent auctions, and nonprofits. We reinvest in ourselves. So pick three. Spend 50. Save your local economy. For more information, visit the350project.net.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
With Mahda Dalyan having a fascinating conversation. But before we pick it up again, I want to give the call-in number for anybody that's listening that would like to comment or ask questions. That number is 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474. Give us a call. We'll have fun. So, Mahda, we were talking about the ego and how you were trained to deal with it, which I found fascinating. And I know you've developed a whole method of working with people based on your experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, since my training was more the training of a shaman, it's more staying present with the fear and doing something, being confronted with something that may be very difficult or very frightening to do. So I always say that, you know, people who do not succeed in this work, whether it's starting out as a paranormal investigator or apprenticing as a shaman, the first time something scary happens, they go running out with their hair on fire and go home, have a beer, watch reality TV or sports, and have a really cool, scary story, but they don't continue the work. And it's the people that stay with it, even though it's a confrontation and you are afraid and you don't know what's going to happen next, that learn to be in that place and still do what needs to be done, that wind up doing the kind of things that everybody goes, how'd you learn to do that? I want to do that. I was like, well, you got to start with some very basic things that are scary and work from there. Slightly different way of approaching it than the mystical approach.
Well, my journey was somewhat different in the sense that I actually was never really interested in trying to learn anything paranormal or trying to learn any method or even thinking that, you know, I'm a healer or interested in learning about healing. Everything sort of happened as an organic development. And for me, I'm more like a curious person. I like to explore things. I like to find things out on my own. And that's how, in a way, as a child, I had an ability to read thought forms. So I could read thought forms. I could read what people were thinking, even though they were saying whatever they were saying, and I could tell that what they're thinking and feeling is completely different. And of course, you know, as a child, you don't know what to do with that. But then later on, when I came across that ability again, and in actually years and years and years later, when I decided, okay, I'm just going to participate in this healing course. I'm just curious to see what this is all about. And this is where I discovered how I can actually read thought forms in the person's body, in their energy, in their unconscious. And that was fascinating in a way that I thought, there's something here. And as I started exploring, at the time I was actually working as a social worker, and I was very frustrated that everything is a band-aid situation and no changes are happening. So I felt like I needed to find a way where we can access those unconscious patterns that are in the body and quickly clear them and help the person transform them. And I explored it for many years in a sense that I hands-on worked with people. I explored this ability that I had, and gradually I came up with this system, which is incredibly fast. It's incredibly powerful. It removes many layers of those repressed thoughts, emotions, and beliefs that are in the body. And as a result, it heals all sorts of incurable illnesses that the medical profession is not able to find any answers, because the answers are obviously in the unconscious and what's imprinted in the body. And so many illnesses have been cured as a result of this method. And the most interesting for me is that as the person starts peeling away the layers and as they're physically start feeling better and better, there's an excitement that starts happening for them to explore deeper and to start finding themselves. And those layers start almost unveiling themselves gradually. And spiritual journey has to be an exciting process. And it is an exciting process. The more a person goes inwards, and the more they start discovering about themselves, the more exciting it gets. And then they take a little bit more courage to go into deeper areas which have been ignored or not looked at due to fear or, you know, due to inability to face the emotions that are connected with that. And life is so interconnected. It's so incredible how even patterns from previous lifetimes come and haunt people. And once you start seeing those patterns, then it's easier to start taking responsibility for yourself instead of saying, well, you know, my mother did this, my father did this. You start recognizing that, well, I chose these parents because I needed the mirrors to help me see the same patterns within myself.
Right. Right. The most difficult people in your life are always the ones that are making the greatest sacrifice and providing difficult lessons for you, which, of course, the ego really hates. But
yeah, well, you know, it's that story. What keeps people a victim is when they, instead of taking taking the opportunity to see, why am I in this situation? What are these things showing me? What are the lessons here? The easiest way is to judge and to blame and to point mm-hmm. a finger. And that's how people miss an opportunity of a lifetime, really, because by doing that, you waste your energy and you waste so many opportunities to actually wake up, find your truth, find yourself, and start celebrating your life instead of continuing to live in the victim mode or continuing to live in a miserable sort of way where you're not able to access your own gifts, your own potential, and start being creative with it.
So you've developed a process that you call the Dalian method to help people work this stuff through. So could you describe that for us?
Well, the process is very simple in a way. I normally get people to make a list of everything that they want me to look at. And it involves the physical, basically the symptoms of physical, emotional, mental, spiritual areas in their life. And then I look into the unconscious. I look through the layers in the unconscious till I come to the main source to where the problem originated. And I communicate that with people. And then I work on their body or I work on their body either in person or over the phone. And I look at the thought forms that are in the body. And through the systems that I've developed, I work with the yin-yang energies, the left-right sides, because there's a general thought form. Just for example, one side might say, I'm afraid, and the person might not even know why they're afraid. And the other side might say, for example, I don't know what to do. So when the left and the right side are the whole body is having this sort of like a main thought form running through it, then obviously the whole energy is undermined. So the person is not really grounded and they don't feel the connection with the earth. They don't feel present. This is how people don't get to feel their presence. So I work with those thought forms, releasing those thought forms through breathing and through verbal expression. And then I work through the whole chakra system, and I work through the head area, the unconscious part, the conscious part, and I bridge the two so that the unconscious becomes conscious for the person. And it happens very quickly once those thought forms are released. And oftentimes there's many contradictory thought forms in the body, and all of them need to be worked with so that we're able to come to the witnessing awareness which can disidentify from those thought forms. And like we were talking about earlier, the thought forms constitute the ego. And the witnessing awareness, the core, is where the consciousness is. And once those thought forms are released, then the consciousness is able to see the aspects of the ego, is able to step out of that. And this is how self-empowerment happens. This is how the old stories get erased. And suddenly the person realizes, oh, you know, I was blaming my partner, I was blaming my parents, and I could see the gift that they gave me. I wasn't seeing this before. I could see what they were mirroring back to me that I needed to learn. The moment they see that, then there's the forgiveness comes automatically. Then there's compassion happens also spontaneously and instantly. And as a result, the whole energy in the body shifts to a completely different place. And I have a method of grounding this after the session very quickly, because these awarenesses oftentimes come to people, but then very quickly also they lose them. So there needs to be a method that could ground this awareness in the body as well, which also as a result of many explorations I came to find this very, very quickly, to do this very quickly. And at the end, I give people specific homework to do with the issues that they had been working with so they can continue integrating. And this is, you know, when I'm working with someone and when they ask me, well, when do you think I should see you again? Normally, the work that happens, it's so powerful that I don't like to see anybody, until it's completely integrated. And normally it takes 3 to 5 to 8 months before even that much work is integrated, because then life situations come in where the person has to almost like test that shift in consciousness, and they have to test it and put it into motion enough times so that awareness is completely grounded. And once that's grounded, then they could go into deeper layers of the unconscious, because unconscious is like an abyss. And the deeper we go, the higher we go in consciousness.
So it sounds like you work with people once and don't see them for quite a while, until they've integrated
right.
it and had many experiences that challenge them.
And I could tell normally how long each person needs to integrate it. So I give them an idea how long they need. And many times they come back and said, that's exactly the right time. That when you said 3 months, this is exactly where I felt I'm now ready for another layer. You know, and that's another thing which is also exciting for people to understand, that, you know, it's a process. Life is a process. So not to be patient with it. And to be patient with yourself and just enjoy the process. Enjoy the process of getting stronger.
Yeah. Yeah. It's getting into the adventure part of it and not seeing it as a problem.
That's right.
So what's the message that you want people to take away from this? What's the understanding that you want people to hear?
Well, the first understanding would be, don't be afraid to explore yourself. Because only through self-exploration is how you're going to find that inner peace, is how you're going to find the happiness that you're longing for, is how you're going to find a better relationship, is how you're going to improve your life, the quality of your life, your lifestyle. Only through self-exploration. These things only happen through self-exploration. And it's so much more exciting to explore yourself by looking in and trying to understand yourself and looking at every life situation as with a question, okay, let me see what are the lessons in this situation, instead of saying, oh, darn, this is happening again. So, okay, well, why is this happening again? Why does it keep happening? What are the lessons I'm not learning here? And this is how we shift that energy and bring it back in, bring it back home. And as we bring that energy back inwards, that's how we can start exploring ourselves. And that's the only way, because we need energy. We need energy for self-exploration. That's why you mentioned about being a hermit before. And traditionally, this happens with every person who is on the journey to find themselves. They bring back all the energies back to themselves, and that's what makes them look like they're a hermit. But in a way, I would say that people who are on the journey of self-exploration that on the outside look like a hermit, I think they're the most exciting and happiest people and the most loving people that you can find. Because they're the most tolerating, because they know that the more you know yourself, the more you start understanding that people are not different, we're all the same. And then you start feeling compassion that okay, now because I understand myself and my own emotions and how my mind works, I can understand how the other person's mind works, so therefore I can have more tolerating approach and attitude and patience with people and be more compassionate. And then you stop blaming and you stop judging, because you know that, you know, you can't judge something that is part of life.
Yep. In shamanic terms, that going off by yourself is called walkabout. where you let go of all the things that you knew in your life and go out into whatever the strange place or experience is, and just have the experience that's often associated with what's called the dark night of the soul, where you finally get to that place of having a very deep conversation with whether you consider it God outside yourself or God inside yourself, and figuring out who you are and what that relationship is. And that's a very deep transformation. But everybody I know that's been on a spiritual path or a shamanic path at some point has had some version of walkabout, whether they did it intentionally or not. You know, you can do that in an ashram. You can do it as a hermit. You can do it by taking a road trip. You can do it by, you know, finding teachers to work with. So there's a lot of different modalities for doing that.
That's right, and absolutely, it's an absolutely necessary step to you know, to walk through the dark night of the soul, because simply what it means, it's walking through your unconsciousness.
Right. But the appearance is that you're leaving everything behind and doing something and walking into the unknown. Of course, it's your own unknown, but you act it out in the physical. Unless, of course, you're in an ashram and you do it all in meditation, which is the other way to do it.
Well, you know, the difference, I think, in the ashram, you still are by yourself. You're still alone in a way doing your work. But the wonderful thing is, especially in an ashram like an Osho's ashram that he created, is to make the journey lighter. There's also the celebration. There's also that part of you can dance, you can have a good time, you can celebrate, right. You can listen to this wonderful discourses about all these mystics that have walked the earth and look at their perspectives, and especially coming from somebody like Osho, who's been so articulate and such a great storyteller, and he's talked on all the masters that, you know, well, I can't say all, but most of the prominent masters that the Earth has known, and when you listen to the stories, it's almost like you're sitting in a presence of these people, like the Buddha, like the Jesus, and Zarathustra, or, you know, Lao Tzu, and you feel the essence of each of these teachers, and you realize that although all of them have reached the same place of enlightenment, their paths have been different, and because their personalities and paths have been different, they have brought in a nice little flavor that makes the world, it's almost like you look at the garden of flowers. It's not just one flower, but there's so many. And it makes it such a nice orchestra. And as a result, you realize that, you know, it's so wonderful that we are different in some ways, that we all bring different gifts. And what one person has, the other person doesn't have. And this is how we can enrich the world, and there's right. no need to compete. There's no need to feel inferior or superior, because each person's gift is uniquely theirs. And to right. repeat that is, I think that's where we go wrong when we try to duplicate or imitate. The most important thing is for each person to find their own unique gifts, because it's theirs. It's their journey. It has their flavor. And, once they find it, that's the thing. Once you find your gift, and you know this because you're living it, you found your gift, you're living your calling. So once you're doing that, there's nothing missing, because there's a sense of completion. You're not borrowing from anyone. You're living your own understanding. You're living what your inner truth is, and you're manifesting that. That's how you contribute best.
Yep, absolutely. And obviously I have my particular version of that, which is kind of strange, but it's what I do. So, yes, absolutely, I agree. Before we get too close to the end of this, I want to make sure people know how to get in touch with you, how to find you, and you know, what you have to offer and how they can connect to you.
I have two websites. One is madadalian.com, and the other one is healingintoconsciousness.com. The healingintoconsciousness.com, it features my book, In Search of the Miraculous, Healing into Consciousness, and the CD, active meditation CD called Know Yes, and I also have an MP3 download called Transcending the Fear of Death and the Unknown. And that's a wonderful process that takes people through the phases of actually how it would happen when you're actually leaving the body at death. So, and it's a very healing process that also allows people to finish some unfinished business or recognize that there is unfinished business that they can finish up. And there is a special also on that website, healingintoconsciousness.com, where with the purchase of the book and the CD, people get a free teleclass with me where they can ask individual questions, and I'll be able to look at whatever problems they're facing and give them some guidance. So that's as a gift with the purchase. And I have online courses, 8-week online courses that we go in depth with each chakra, through each chakra, and work with what's blocking each chakra and I give individual guidance to each person to what they can do with their process of healing and consciousness. And and I'll be in Omega Institute with the weekend workshop this coming July 29th to 31st.
Oh, terrific. Mada, this has been wonderful. I so enjoyed listening to your path and what you do. And I really appreciate you being on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much for having me, David. It's always nice to chat with someone who understands what you're talking about and helps to bring the message out.
isn't that the truth? Thank you so much. Tonight, I want to make sure you know how to find me, David Franklin Farkas. You'll find my work at househealing.com. househealing.com. Just go to the contact page and it's all there, hiding in plain sight. Next week, we have a fascinating guest. Brad Scott is very well known in Australia and New Zealand. He's a radio and TV personality focusing on the paranormal. So his Ghost Hunters Australia is a very different kind of paranormal TV show, because it's a bunch of people who have been doing it for a very long time, just doing what they do and talking about it. There's no hype. There's no artificially pumped up moments. It's just people that really know what they're doing, sharing their experience. He also has Naked Zombie Paranormal Radio. And he's just a fascinating guest, and he was nice enough to pre-record the show with us. And the reason we pre-recorded, and several people have asked me to announce this, is I'm having surgery on Monday, July 25th. No big deal. Don't get freaked out. I'm considering it a hardware upgrade. It's a long overdue hip replacement. So on Monday, if you can think of me and send me some good healing energy and support me, I'll be in the hospital for about 4 days, and then I'll be recuperating at home, of course, with two shamans with me working on me all the time. So it will be a little bit different from most people's hospital experience and recovery experience. And if you're interested, contact me on the website. I'm going to be putting up a website called David's Hippy Dippy Helpers, where you'll be able to get a play-by-play on what's going on and send me good wishes and that kind of thing. So I can send you that link if you're interested. So next week we'll have Brad Scott. That'll be pre-recorded. And the week after that, I will be back
live as we usually are. So I want to thank all of you for following us. I love doing this show. I get to meet wonderful people and have a fantastic time. So this is David Franklin Farkas here on the Farkas Files, and I'm sure the truth is in here somewhere here on Empower Radio. See you in 2 weeks. Listen to Brad next week. He's a hoot. We had a great time. We'll be back soon.
All the best, David.
Thanks so much.